tell the people what you're here for.
We got to stop it, brother. Let's get together and unify.
Radio Basics.
And there's always a message involved.
Good evening, everyone. This is Nadine Alkasim and
Kirthi
from Radio Basics. Today, we bring you a very, very special edition of Radio Basics. As some of you might know, today is December 6th, National Day to Commemorate Violence Against Women. And just recently, it was November 25th, the International Day Against Violence Against Women.
So, for those of you who are not quite familiar with the history of the Montreal Massacre, it took place around 21 years ago at the L'École Polytechnique in Montreal. And what happened was that Marc Lépine was armed and he actually opened fire at female students at this engineering college and massacred basically 14 female students. He said he was actually fighting feminism, and he went on this whole like shooting spree and killed 14 women and injured around a dozen others, and finally he killed himself. So ever since, that day has been commemorated as the National Day of Remembrance and Action on Violence Against Women. I'm going to just quickly read out the names of the women who were killed that day. I'm not really good at reading out French names, so for, you know, excuse me for those who actually are. I think I should be okay. I'll try. I got Geneviève Bergeron, Hélène Colgan, Nathalie Croteau, Barbara Desnold, Anne-Marie Edward, Maud Havernick, Maryse Laganier, Maryse Leclerc, Anne-Marie Lemay, Sonia Pelletier, Michelle Richard, Annie St. Arnold, Annie Turcotte, Barbara Klushnik, Wicks. Okay, I messed up that one. I'm sorry. But yeah, so those were the 14 female students who got killed that day because they were female engineering students or they were just women. So basically just, it's really prevalent that, you know, violence against women is still a huge issue. It's not something from, like, back in the days or anything. It's still pretty prevalent even to this day. And these are just the names that we actually know, but there are a lot of names, a lot of voices that we never hear, a lot of names that we don't hear or stories that we never get to hear. And these, and we should always put in an effort to reflect on that.
And I think, Kirthi, what you're saying is quite true. These 14 women who died in Montreal 21 years ago represent much more than what happened and what is encompassed in that horrible and tragic, horrific event of a crazed individual who decided to take out his anger and aggression on those 14 victims. December 6th has become a sort of day for people to reflect across Canada on the violence that they are faced with, especially women, on a daily basis, both on a systemic level and in their daily lives. And as you said, Kirthi, we don't get to hear a lot of those stories. So just to give us a little bit of time to reflect and think about the horrific nature of this violence and the fact that it is rooted in our system, and that what happened 21 years ago was not just an isolated incident of a crazy man. It was part of that violent system. Mm-hmm. We're going to play you a song by the Cat Power called Names, and it tells a series of horrific stories about young men and women and the horrible violence that the system has inflicted on them.
Difficulty. Swallow.
Wow. So that's definitely some food for thought. It's really important to stop and think about these things and to really think about how people's lives are affected by this violence from the moment they experience it and how it lasts forever. With that, we're going to go to commercial. And after commercial, we'll bring you an interview with Anna Willits, who is a veteran violence against women activist here in the city of Toronto.
Estás escuchando CHRY 105.5, tu estación de radio comunitaria. Escucha en vivo en nuestro sitio web www.chry.fm.
Hi everyone, we're back, and as I said before the break, we're going to be speaking with Anna Willits, who is an activist working on social justice issues, particularly violence against women, since 1982 in Toronto. She's also a teacher in the Assaulted Women's and Children's Counselor Advocate Program and works with women who want to get into skilled trades at George Brown College. Anna is also a member and supporter of many organizations, including the Toronto Police Accountability Coalition, the MayWorks Festival of Working People and the Arts, the Toronto Rape Crisis Center / Multicultural Women Against Rape, and the Shelter Sanctuary Status Campaign, which fights for the right of non-status women to access anti-violence services in the GTA without fear of arrest and deportation. So without further ado, I'm going to turn it over to Kirti, who will be speaking with Anna Willits.
Hi, Anna. Are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi there, Kirti.
How are you, Anna?
I'm good tonight. How are you?
Good, good. You know, just fighting the cold, I guess.
Yeah, tell it.
Yeah, thanks a lot for joining us today, Anna. And I just wanted to know, as a veteran in the violence against women movement in Toronto, mm-hmm. Can you tell us about the movement and how it has changed over time from your viewpoint?
Oh, wow, that's a big question. It's changed a lot, I think. The mid-70s is probably when a lot of what people kind of identify as violence against women's services in the city first got started in Canada. So it was, I think, 1974 that a shelter here in Toronto called Interval House opened up. That was the year the Toronto Rape Crisis Center established its crisis line. Mm-hmm. And I guess, I mean, the thing at that time, in the mid-70s and into the 80s, we didn't usually wait and see if we could find funding for something. Mm-hmm. We just, women did it because it needed to be done. So, for example, the first shelters were really women's homes where they would open them to other women who were experiencing violence and offer them a safe place to stay. And, of course, that became, that was so needed and such a huge issue that these spaces, these safe spaces for women just grew and grew and grew. And as the years went on, feminists and other women working within those spaces did a lot of advocacy and lobbying and public education and demonstrating and all sorts of different kinds of actions to finally get governments to recognize that violence against women was indeed a gendered issue, you know, mm-hmm. that women were being experiencing violence because of their gender, and also convince governments to put some funding into these services so that they could develop and grow right across the country. So that happened all through the 80s, and really where we're at right now is it's probably not so much of a movement, an anti-violence mm-hmm. movement, as it is a sector. And so what's happened is that as the case for the need for shelters and crisis lines and all sorts of services expanded, and as those services also developed to meet the needs of much more diverse groups of women, so recognizing, you know, because a lot of the activism of the 70s, really the beneficiaries tended to be white middle-class women, or certainly white women. Mm-hmm. And over the years, the women's movement has understood that women experience many different kinds of oppression that all impact on her and make it very difficult to escape from violent situations. And also the nature of the violence looks different for different women. So the sector has grown and grown and grown, and that's been a wonderful thing. It also has meant, though, that the sector, I think, is not as activist as it once was. partly because it's become very well established, you know, and mm-hmm. very well resourced. And not that, I mean, services always could use a few more dollars to be able to expand services and do better work, but it certainly is very well resourced compared to what it used to be.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And what's happened is that people, women working within those services, have found that they need more and more and more education in order to be able to work in those services. So it's been kind of a mixed blessing, you know, if it makes sense, in that, of course, we need the services and we want them there, but we also want to make sure that we're always understanding that real change comes from the grassroots,
mm-hmm.
and that women who use services are really the experts on what is happening in their lives and what they need in order to be able to escape violence. And we have to always make sure that we stay true to those ideals, because you can get, you know, you can get separated from those as you get into big organizations that
Definitely.
Start to look a little bit too much, too hierarchical, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So it's a constant tension.
You referred to it as a mixed blessing.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that?
Well, as I was saying, because the bigger an organization gets, the farther it can get from its grassroots principles. And that's, like I say, for example, when I joined the Rape Crisis Center in 1982, and the Rape Crisis Center is one of those organizations that has stayed run as a collective and a non-hierarchical space. So I'm not speaking about it particularly when I say mixed blessing, but when I started there, most women's organizations really valued and really honored the experience of survivors. They were survivor-led. It was, you know, it was important to make sure that women who had experienced violence were really directing the organization's mission and values, et cetera. And as more money has gotten poured into the sector, mm-hmm. what's happened is more and more mainstream organizations like the police, for example, or hospitals or, you know, institutions. And I want to say right off the bat, I know I work in one, right? So
mm-hmm.
We're all kind of part of that problem. What happens is you get an increased need for credentials in order to do the work that we used to do as grassroots organizers. You start to see that the survivorship can get more and more marginalized. I'm not saying every service does that, but you run the danger of that when you get into, when you start being a service sector as opposed to a movement. It's a difference, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, lots of people have written about this, and the Insight Collective, of course, in the United States has done amazing work on the name's gone out of my head, but it's the industrial... It's an industrial complex, the nonprofit industrial complex, for example. So you have to be careful of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say that that has happened in some cases.
Anna, this is Nadine here. I just have a question about
mm-hmm.
that.
Mm-hmm.
So you're saying in this move from movement-oriented, grassroots-led
mm-hmm.
activism and struggle towards the sector... those that have the credentials that are coming from a particular background are the ones we see in that sector. But of course, with that, there are definitely women and other marginalized groups who are bearing the brunt of this shift. Can you speak a little bit about who's on the receiving end of this shift and some of the negative impacts that this has had on women?
For sure, I can try to. And I do want to be clear that I am generalizing a bit. So, of course, within these services, we have lots of incredibly dedicated activists working within those services. And I don't want to denigrate the incredible work that they do. So I don't mean to be doing that at all. I think what happens is that, for example, women who are undocumented, for example, will find that as services become more... regulated, have more reporting requirements, have become more hierarchical, so they become more program focused, and women are kind of expected to go through certain kinds of programs. What happens is the survivor, the woman who's experienced the violence, may experience less and less choice about how she accesses services. And that, for some women, that's not going to be a big deal. But for some women, if because of their status, for example, they're very fearful about who mm-hmm. has access to that information, if she feels like she has to go through a whole bunch of vetting processes in order to access a program, that's going to be very difficult for her. And or for a woman who is very isolated in her community, it may become very, very difficult for her to access those services. It may be that one thing I think that's happening that I think is really going to be problematic is there's a move by government to centralize all the services, put them all under one roof.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be one thing if we were talking about a bunch of grassroots services. But in some cases, I know in a Kitchener model, for example, what they've done is they put the police, the child protection agency, the settlement service, the not the shelter, but the women's anti-violence service, you know, putting those all in one place. Now, I know the rationale is that this is good for women because instead of having to go here, there, and all over town to access different services, women are going to be able to go to one place to get all the services that they need. But the problem is, if one of those services is the police or a child protection agency, the fact that they are there, and if women start to believe that they're going to be required to go to every single one of those services, that's going to keep a lot of women at home. They're not going to do that. They don't trust the police, you know, for good reason. They may be fearful about losing children, and that may make them not want to take that chance. They may find themselves pushed into going through certain kinds of processes that they don't want to go through. And we have to be careful about that, because when a woman experiences violence, the thing she needs to regain is control over her life.
Mm-hmm.
And putting her into a system where that control gets taken away, even by people who are very well-meaning, is not going to be helpful to her. And it's going to be particularly hard on the more marginalized women, the women who do sex work,
yeah.
if they're fearful of being arrested, right?
Mm-hmm.
And having that, or women facing any kind of charges for that matter, as a matter of fact. So women with addictions who may find that they get pushed to deal with an addiction before they're allowed to deal with the violence. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? So
yeah, it definitely puts them in a very difficult situation if that
does.
Were to happen, right?
Yeah, and it becomes... one of our principles is to be, and forgive the word client, but it's to mm-hmm. be woman-focused, right? Is to let the person, the survivor, direct what happens next. And we have to always be thinking about how we structure services to ensure that that can happen.
I also, well, like Nadine mentioned earlier, you are part of the Shelter, Sanctuary, and Status campaign, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you shed some more light on that and what's really happening right now and possibly how people can get involved in that?
Definitely talk about a recent thing that's happened. The campaign started by focusing on doing work with anti-violence services and doing workshops and working with women, undocumented women and women without status to deliver workshops at shelters and anti-violence services in an effort to work with those services to develop what we called access without fear policies. And the idea was that services would develop policies that would ensure that undocumented women would be able to use those services without fear that they would be reported to police or Canada Border Services agency. And that campaign was going very well. We had last March 2010, we had a press conference, a media conference, in reaction to the fact that an undocumented woman who went by the name of Jane had reported that immigration enforcement had come to a shelter where she was staying. Unfortunately, she wasn't there, but they had come looking for her.
Mm-hmm.
And so we had a media conference, and there were several speakers, some from the campaign, Eileen Morrill from the Ontario Association of Interval and Transition Houses, and others, speaking about the fact that these spaces needed to be safe spaces for women, that by coming to anti-violence spaces to enforce deportation orders, CBSA was, in effect, sentencing women to be stuck in violent homes. And they were also making those spaces unsafe for any woman, not only undocumented women, but all women. And so shortly after that media conference, a delegation from the campaign, and including activists and including undocumented women, women staying in shelters, did go and confront CVSA at their offices. One fellow, his name is Reg Williams, is the GTA regional director. And as a result of that action, as well as followed by negotiations with representatives from anti-violence services, the CVSA was convinced to issue a directive to their officers. And that directive essentially says that those officers, when they're conducting what they call a road investigation, officers will not enter shelters or other spaces designated as resources for women fleeing or experiencing violence. That they're not to wait outside or approach those spaces, and they'll maintain a reasonable distance away from them, and that they're not to approach those spaces to make inquiries into the identity of women who may be subject to an immigration investigation. So that directive was issued a couple of months ago,
mm-hmm.
and on November 25th, the International Day for the Elimination of Violence Against Women, the campaign launched a video that is just a short little video that in a different way illustrates that directive. It includes the directive and it includes information about...
Where can you find the video?
You can find the video at... I'm going to find it on a page. You can go to the No One Is Illegal Toronto website
mm-hmm.
and find it. You can also find it on YouTube. It's got this... I think if you do youtube.com plug into the search box immigration enforcement or I've got an email or a YouTube site here, but it's kind of long. I don't know if your listeners will be able to get it all down.
Maybe
but
some keywords that we can just, you know,
well,
type
I'm just
in
trying,
and
I'm just trying to think. I would think that it would be CBFA. No One Is Illegal.
And Anna, if you
shelter
send that,
sanctuary status, actually.
If you send that link to us, we can actually put it up on the Basics website so that people can access more information about the campaign.
Brilliant. I will do that.
Great.
For sure.
Great. Wonderful. It was great and very insightful speaking with you this evening, and I'm sure that our listeners, as well as ourselves, learned quite a bit about the trajectory of the violence against women's movement and some of the shifts that it has experienced in the last few years. Thank you so much. And we look forward to following the work that you do. Thank you.
Thanks a lot
for joining us, Anna. It's definitely inspiring to see how grassroots movement can gain so much momentum and, you know, influence change, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Got to keep doing it as well.
For sure. You have a good evening.
You too.
And with that, we're going to go into another song from a Montreal-based music collective called Nomadic Massive, called Where I'm From. And this song deals with the systemic violence that women face on a day-to-day basis.
Chasing me, cause where I'm from, we bank accounts and still ain't got no families. We got keepers killing seeds, manufacturing disease, stand, sit, genuflecting, yo. They're breaking even, despot, too weak for greed. Evil deeds, they do with ease. Who they once was calling mammies, now they calling them nannies. And what's this? You got skills, but need master's degrees. And better yet, you got ideas, but ain't got ID. And some of them mad rich and no good deed. And some of them mad guilty, but they comfortably got 2020 proof of plenty. And don't wanna see that when conscience gets a grip, this greed's what's enemy. And like the witness, mind your business. Best to find a minor rover. Ain't no time for supernova. Time for being super blunt. Chumps are hunting kids to feed. Lead a team of refugees. And if you see it, tell a queen I'm coming for my gabardine. My world, life, I'm living. While others still kill, still spinning. These leaders, demons, stabbing, and don't get us in a children's dying. My world, life, I'm living. While others still kill, still spinning. These leaders,
bombs heaving up for the wrong reasons. Cousins gone breathing summits, caught treason, love with a strong meaning. Cut along leaving, but the White House doused in oil. Green zones beneath brown pounded soil. I can feel it coming. Black skies that smother. Brothers die for us. We busy speaking colors. And death is not an option. Lies and forgotten rockets. They march and chop and propelling helicopters into a swelling monster. Sending dead bags flags and head wraps, sacks and stress taxes. And dead passes, massive threats blasting past dreams. Seem to forget that your demons get sent back. Screaming for dead to cool you. Can't fool you. That's your only bit to boo you.
So we're going to listen to a next track by Lauryn Hill, Doo-Wop That Thing, and following that we'll have our interview with Faith Nolan.
Remember back on the bully when cats used to harmonize like, yo, my men and my women, don't forget about the dean, this is not the most the king, yo, it's about a thing,
feel real good when your hands
in the air.
Looking for your friend, the one you let hit it and never called you again. Remember when he told you he was about to Benjamins? Yeah. You act like you ain't him, they give him a little trim to begin. Now you think you really gon' pretend like you wasn't down and you called him again. Plus when you give it up so easy, you ain't even fooling him. If you did it then, and you probably can. Talking out your neck saying you're a Christian. A Muslim sleeping with the gin. Now that was the sin that did Jezebel in. Who you gon' tell when the repercussions spin? Showing off your ass cause you thinking it's a trend, girlfriend. Let me break it down for you again. You know I only say it cause I'm truly genuine. Don't be a hard rock when you really are a gin, baby girl. Respect is just the minimum. Minimum. You still defending them now. Lauren is only human. Don't think I haven't been through the same predicament. Let it sit inside your head like a million women in Philly pen. It's silly when girls sell their souls because it's sin. Look at where you be in. Hair weaves like Europeans. Fake nails done by Koreans. Come again. To the men, more concerned with his rims and his Timbs and his women, him and his men, come in the club like hooligans, don't care who they you been, popping yang,
like you got yang.
Let's not pretend, the one to pack pissed out by the waistman, crissed out by the casement, still the name of his basement, the pretty face man, claiming that they did a bid, man, need to take care of their 3 and 4 kids, in the face in court case when the child support's late, money taking heartbreaking, now you wonder why women hate men, the sneaky silent men, the punk domestic violence men, the quick to shoot the semen, stop acting like boys and be men, how you gonna win when you ain't right within? How you gon' win when you ain't right within? How you gon' win when you ain't right within? Come again.
right, so that was Lauryn Hill, Doo-Wop, That Thing. So now I'm going to just quickly introduce Faith Nolan, who's on the line with us today. So Faith is an artist who is also a community builder. She's presently the director of Sing Elementary Teacher of Toronto and is in the process of founding a music therapy course for women prisoners in an Ontario jail. She has founded three Toronto-based choirs, Sistering Singers, Mandela Children's Choir, and Voices of Freedom. In the late 80s, she founded and directed Kingston Women Prisoners Choir. And in 2004, she was on the board of Mayworks Toronto. She's also a founding member of a number of collectives and organizations such as Black Women's Collective, Our Lives Newspaper, Sisters Cafe, and so on. And she is an Afro Nova Scotian Mi'kmaq Irish activist whose songs deals with a range of issues, including Afro-Canadian history and Native heritage, feminism, workers' issues, and children's rights. Faith is one of those rare artists who can grab a song and make the message ring out true and clear. Enhancing her musical is the creative allowances that comes from being self-taught, actually. Her songs come from a deep commitment to the struggles of people throughout the world. And she uses music to basically connect the conditions and exploitation of oppressed peoples in songs such as The Richest in the World, Hard to Imagine, which lyrically tells the story of poverty, racism, violence against women, and the need to struggle for a better world to live in. So, Faith, are you there?
Hi.
How are you doing, Faith?
I'm good. Who's this?
This is Kirti and...
Kirti.
Yes, and Nadine will be interviewing you.
Hi, okay. Faith. How are you?
Hi, Nadine. I'm pretty good.
Okay, great. So, yeah, I just wanted to, first to start off about asking you about your work in prisons with female prisoners. I wanted you to tell us a little bit about the situation for women prisoners right now in Ontario and Canadian prisons.
Well, I think right now there's more women prisoners than there has ever been in the history of this part of Turtle Island. It's gone up 300% in a decade plus.
Wow.
There used to be one federal prison for women, which was when you're sentenced for over 2 years. Now there are six across Canada, and more and more are going up. That's part of the prison industrial complex. It's hardest to talk about it in Canada because the same multinationals that buy into prisons to make prison plantations and create a free labor force, like that's why they call them plantation jails, it's the same thing that's going on globally, that's going on within Canada.
Mm-hmm.
So all of this money is being put into building new prisons, but all of the services are being privatized, and of course they're trying to smash the unions too, and to deprivatize everything to create more global capital, more profit. And each woman prisoner costs between $150,000 and $300,000 a year to keep one woman in prison.
Mm-hmm.
That money, like $300,000 a year, imagine if anybody made that kind of money. Or even if $50,000 was given and a person was given a job and housing. Because most of the women, it's a cycle. The cycle of, I guess it's a cycle of incarceration, like the cycle of poverty.
Mm-hmm.
That once you find yourself in the system, it's very hard not to get back into it. Because after you do go to jail, it's on your resume and any check that's done on you. So it's very hard to gain employment.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing done to guarantee that prisoners are given jobs when they leave. For women prisoners particularly, they have children, and oftentimes they're separated from their newborn children and put into prisons, which is really, very punitive, not only on the woman prisoner, but on the children who are left motherless.
Of course.
So it's a really dire situation.
Definitely. I just wanted to ask you a little bit more about the prison population, the women prison population. I understand a significant part of the female prison population is actually made up of Indigenous women. And
yeah, that's true. There are statistics that say that across Canada, while Indigenous women Aboriginal women account for only 2-3% of the population, across Canada they account for 30% of prisoners. And in Saskatchewan, they account for 80 to 90% of the prison population.
Wow.
But the other thing I think, which is really important, is that these are women of color, indigenous mm-hmm. women. But the other thing is that black women are incarcerated mm-hmm. at an alarming rate, too. But, of course, there are no statistics done on that. And East Asian women, and also queer women, women who are butch,
of course,
are much more likely to be given longer sentences and incarcerated. Mm-hmm.
And I think what you were saying about it being like what is a cyclical thing, like once you're in the system, that's it. Like it's hard to get out of that cycle, and they do everything in their power. The state does everything in their power to make you stay in that cycle. So, of course, women of color, working class women, women who are even, under the pale of employment, queer women, they end up being in that cycle, and it's so hard for them to break out on so many levels.
Other thing is most women are incarcerated. About 80% have been sexually abused,
mm-hmm.
and over 55% have mental health conditions. And, of course, the alarming majority, at least 98%, are poor women. So most women are in crimes for economic crimes.
Mm.
And that has directly to do with poverty and the alarming rate of the feminization of poverty
mm-hmm.
across this continent and many, many continents, of course.
And you mentioned mental health problems. And, of course, this is to be expected in a situation where women are pushed into this cycle that they can't escape. They're separated from their children. They're basically committing, like you said, their economic crimes. Like, people need to survive. So they're pushed to doing things that, no one really wants to do. But in prisons, I understand there's a huge lack of provision and understanding for mental health issues. Can you explain a little bit why you think that's the case and what the impact of that is?
Both the mm-hmm. cutbacks in health have directly affected people with mental health issues. And prison has become a catch-all for all of the social failings.
Mm.
So women who are, mentally... who are experiencing mental problems are, instead of, there's no room in hospitals, so they're just being placed into jails. Well, most women are not at all a threat to society, they're not going to go and hurt somebody. Most women have hurt themselves, either because of the alarming incidence of abuse, mm-hmm. sexual abuse and emotional abuse. They mostly hurt themselves through drugs or through sex work. And these are things that, nobody should be incarcerated. As a matter of fact, prison should be abolished altogether
mm-hmm.
because it just creates that, it's a moneymaker now.
Yeah, and it's definitely a deviant model. Like, it basically pushes people into this sort of realm of thinking that, everyone in these prisons are horrible, evil people, when we know that is not the case. And I wanted to draw our listeners' attention to some of the efforts you have made to address a lot of these issues in amongst the prison populations. I know that you've just founded or you're trying to start a music therapy course with women prisoners in Ontario.
Well, it's actually been going on. This course has been going on for the last 6 years.
Mm. Oh, okay.
At Central East Correctional Center in Lindsay.
Okay.
And it's taken place also at Central North Correctional Center in Penetang with women. So it's been going on for quite a while.
Mm.
And, of course, the arts is a very healing, task.
Mm.
To do art is very healing. And it is also very strengthening. I think this is why we saw during slavery so many great songs were written. During the Depression, so much blues were written.
Yeah.
And also, I wanted to say that at the end of slavery, which would have ended in Canada probably 1832, and in the U.S. in 1865, there wasn't enough free slave labor to go around because the slaves had been freed. So they started making laws that created conditions where they could incarcerate huge numbers of black people in plantation jails, which is really what's going on today. At that time, they made laws like if you were black, you couldn't be out after 6 o'clock at night,
mm-hmm.
or you'd be locked up in jail, right?
Mm-hmm.
So these kinds of laws and these drug laws, like if you were caught with marijuana, you can be sentenced to up to 5 years in a federal institution for smoking a joint.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that law was rescinded, I think, for about a day. And I think at the time Bush said, no, put it back on, because, of course, this keeps the millions of certainly black Americans, and the youth here in Canada being increasingly incarcerated, mm-hmm. which creates a great prison industrial complex, which is just, mm-hmm. it's all a moneymaker. And I think the thing that whether we have to understand with women is that women, because of racism, because of racism against indigenous people, because of racism against black and Asian and immigrant, so-called immigrant people, they are much more likely to be incarcerated. And this is the growing population. And women are the fastest growing population. Mm-hmm. Of course, there's not much studies done on women because of sexism. And that really plays out in the prison. And prison is a microcosm of the racist, sexist, capitalist, mm-hmm. homophobic society mm-hmm. that we live in.
Faith, I had a quick question. Can you maybe touch upon how exactly, you know, the prison industrial complex is benefiting from so-called slave labor? Like, or can you just shed a bit more light on that really quickly?
For example, in the the jail in Ontario, prisoners make license plates. Those designer license plates, you know, you can get I love me or I'm the best.
Brother.
Those are made by free prison labor. At the end of the week, prisoners are given chocolate bars.
Chocolate bars? Seriously?
Chocolate bars after a week's work mm-hmm. as a reward or a bag of chips.
Whoa, that's insane.
Now, the other thing is that women in the prison are making, doing all of the laundry for the prison and the prison staff.
Wow.
Sometimes.
That's so of course just
insane. And also being that sometimes being hired out from the local communities.
Okay. Too. That's crazy. So Faith, I wanted to know, where can we get more information? Is there a website or anything where we can get all these information? Because we are kind of short in time.
Mm-hmm. Well, I would think that the person who kind of puts out a lot of information is named Kim Pate.
Mm-hmm.
And she's with the E. Fry Society. So if you look her up on the internet
mm-hmm.
and read some of the statistics that E. Fry has gathered around women prisoners. Who
so that's Kim Pate, you said?
Kim Pate.
Kim Pate, the E. Fry Society.
Yeah.
Okay, so what we'll
keep that in mind.
What we'll do, Faith, is if you send me that information, we'll put it up on the Basics website so that our listeners can get a lot more detailed information on what
I just want to say, I think Basics is doing a great job, and it would be nice to see, some of the sisters and brothers in trans go in and do some programs with prisoners.
That would be amazing.
Writing programs.
Hook it up.
Nice.
We'd love to do that. We'll talk more about that for sure, Faith. Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm sure we have to cut it short, but we're almost out of time. I'd like you to, keep on keeping on. We'll get in touch with you definitely to hook some programs up for to work with prisoners, and get Basics in there. Thank you so much and have a great night.
Okay, thanks. Take care.
And with that, I'm going to take you into commercials.
You're listening to CHRY 105.5 FM, your community radio.
Minha força, meu animal.
And we're back. That was Lal, a Toronto-based amazing artist and friend, with a great song, Self-Defense, with a great message. Kirti, we heard a lot of amazing things going on today, mm-hmm. and I think that's what we need to take from today's program.
For sure.
Although we're still experiencing systemic and horrific violence against women, there is amazing women out there organizing against this violence and not giving up, and their work is proving to be successful.
Mm-hmm. And we just scratched the surface, basically. We didn't even go into any of the details,
exactly.
right? Like, we were just really gracing the surface, and we got so many shocking information just in that half hour mm-hmm. time, right?
And I think so that our listeners can get a little bit better informed, we'll put this information on the Basics Community Nurse News Service website at basicsnews.ca. Both about the EFRI Society and some of the work that Faith is doing, and also the information about Anna's work with Shelter Sanctuary Status. Mm-hmm. And on that note, we're going to take you out with a positive song by India Ari, Strength, Courage, and Wisdom. Thanks so much for listening.
It's an awesome song. Anyways, Toronto, keep yourself warm tonight and for the rest of the week, I guess.
Thanks, Kirti. Bye, everyone.
Take care.
It's not